Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, communicate with the program, 251-343-0106. If you want to interact with me, the host, that's how you do so. So look up on the program about an hour from now. Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. We hear from him every Wednesday. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Alabama Republican Party Chairman Scott Stadthagen will be with us. So please stick around for that as well. Joining us now, he writes a column for us at 1819 News. He's also a fellow at the Heritage Foundation. But Alan Mendenhall makes time for us this morning. Alan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for making time for us. We always appreciate it. Let's start here. So one of your latest columns here at 1819 caught my attention. And, you know, we pay a lot of lip service to eradicating the DEI in our state government. And there's a what I find to be a very vague law called divisive concepts. And it needs some tweaking, I think. But regardless, there's still these racial quotas that make up, a lot of, I mean, it's all statute. That you have to have this still exists in Alabama, and it's in the law.
Yeah, there are, as far as I could tell, 8 statutes that require hard quotas. So a minimum number of the members of these different boards and commissions have to be made up of people of a specific racial or ethnic group, which is very obviously a violation of the Equal Protection Clause. So as just like an example, the Alabama High School of Math and Science Board of Directors requires at least 2 of the 9 appointments to be minorities, or the Board of Occupational Therapy requires at least 1 member to be a minority. And then like the State Board of Podiatry requires a vacancy specifically for a black member. And these are all racial quotas. So they all basically on their face discriminate on the basis of race. And there are people that might say, okay, well, you know, given the history of racial injustice in Alabama, we ought to discriminate against people of certain races to make up for the past injustices. But the problem when you start going down that path, when you start saying that the law should not be racially neutral and that it should not treat everybody equally, notwithstanding race, is you get into questions like, okay, well then how much racial discrimination is necessary? How long should we discriminate against races? Which races should we discriminate against and which races should we not discriminate against? You know, who decides? Like, who decides which races? What do you do with children like mine whose, you know, their mom is Brazilian? And what race are they? You know, do they count as white? Do they count as Latino? What are they? Like, who you know, what are those? And so you get to these really messy situations that would be fixed so easily just by saying, look, the law should not discriminate on the basis of race. Race is a service level characteristic. It's an immutable characteristic that you cannot choose. You can't pick to be black. You can't pick to be white. You're just born into the world with that. And we want the law to make distinctions based on people's choices. If you make a bad decision, you should suffer the consequences. But if you are just born one way or another, then the law shouldn't discriminate against you in that way.
Well, it's all like the big thing to me is it's just a moral meritocracy. And, you know, these boards, we obviously we have way too many of them in the state, but like you want the best qualified person and you don't, there's no, like this affirmative actionism. I mean, I expect that in some places where they try to social engineer and they think the power of the government's almighty. We should be doing that in Alabama.
Yeah, they shouldn't be doing that in Alabama. And if you look at the soft quotas, they allow, I mean, there are tons of them. I think I just said there were 8 hard quotas, but there are, I don't even know how many, probably dozens of soft quotas that say something like, you know, to be a member of this board must have racial, gender, geographic, urban diversity, all that kind of stuff. So it's not as severe or strict as the hard quotas, but they would require state appointers like the governor or whoever, the lieutenant governor, to apportion membership based on sort of racial and ethnic percentages. And again, there are a ton of these, and they go through, I mean, all kinds of boards, whether it's the Alabama Securities Commission to just like the Alabama Senior Citizens Hall of Fame. There's so many of these. And again, they are discriminatory, and they're not really helpful in any way to the excellence of our state and the representation on these boards.
Well, it's like it's just a one giant like virtue signaling scandal here. It's this stuff isn't really doing what they think it does. It's you know, I see it, and I, you know, how did this come to be? What were they thinking at the time? And when it comes down to it, it's not really about anything that they state. It's just that I think they want to show everybody that they are down for this, or they don't want to check a box or whatever. That's not the role of the government here. We don't need these virtue signaling exercises built into government, and they're just all throughout.
Yeah, I think, you know, Alabama, we still deal with a little bit of an inferiority complex. We feel guilt and shame because of our past, and we try to overcompensate by embedding harmful things into our code that end up, A, harming the very populations they're intended to help, but B, subjecting us to potential lawsuits and, you know, financial mismanagement. I mean, what's going to happen is that somebody is going to start challenging these statutes. If the legislature doesn't eliminate some of these things or all of these things, then they'll get challenged in court, and we'll spend a lot of money trying to defend them, and it will be a gigantic waste. And so, you know, these are just very simple simple things to get rid of, and I suspect the legislature will start addressing these. I in fact, since my article came out, I've had some conversations with some folks up in Montgomery that make me believe somebody is going to do something to address this.
Well, wait, it's going to work. And sure, somebody will file some bills. But there's just this, this gets back to sort of how the legislature conducts business. The Roger Smithermans and Bobby Singletons are going to filibuster. It's going to upset the flow of business. They can't get to whatever tax break or tax incentive they want to give to whatever special interest group that's pounding on their door. It's going to take away from some of the time. They just don't want to deal with it a lot of times. Maybe they're on our side here, but they know that in the Senate, at least, this is a hill to die on for some of these guys, so don't even bring it up. That's why it took so long to get the Birmingham Water Works Board figured out.
Well, and another thing you'll see is you'll get sort of hacks like Josh Moon at the Alabama Political Reporter or any number of writers for AL.com who realize that if you say a bunch of negative things about Alabama, somebody in New York City is going to throw awards at you. You know, the easiest way to get a Pulitzer is to be in Alabama and criticize Alabama. That's how you get all the accolades and credentials from people outside of our state. So they just write a bunch of trash, and their writing is terrible. It's embarrassing. And yet it still gets rewarded. And when people start criticizing Republicans on the basis of racial, you know, issues, then understandably, people get really scared of that, you know, and our legislators will back away from things, even if on principle they are the correct things, even if they're the ones that are standing against racial discrimination and against racial classifications, and they're correct philosophically, they'll still back down because they're so afraid of that narrative that gets pushed out there by a lot of these hacks that really don't know what they're talking about.
Well, they're really fearful of like sort of the club being upset that these guys will go on the floor and they'll abuse their privilege, they'll filibuster, they will make a stand on these boards, as we've seen with the Archives and History Board, for some reason, just getting that to keep it from being a self-perpetuating board, or these libraries, or just anytime you want to tinker with this odd, like, kind of patchwork system of boards and commissions that we have in this state, this is the hill they die on. So, like, yeah. The way this has to work is just people got to be aware of it and know that they're essentially violating federal law with this framework here. And I think these lawmakers will just be like, well, we'll just battle it out at federal court at the expense of the taxpayer.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And under U.S. Supreme Court precedent, an equal protection injury under a racial classification doesn't require the same type of standing. So you could, if you're basically anybody who wants to serve on one of these boards and you can't because of these quotas, you can bring suit. So it's not actually that hard to sue. And I know plenty of legal public interest firms that would be willing to take on cases like this and would be happy to connect, you know, any potential plaintiff with one of those organizations.
Yeah. Well, it's just it is kind of stunning that this still goes on. And like I said, I know they're trying to eradicate a lot of it. But to me, like when I see this, is like it's coming. We're not going to think of this as being that controversial and something that would get that much opposition, especially in the Republican supermajority. But the way the rules are, the way that these, especially these state senators, really shy away from this stuff, because it just makes the day longer. It's going to take a little more push, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I intend to write about this again. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do because I haven't conceived of the articles yet, but I might focus on some particular boards. But I'm going to dig in a little more before we get to this next legislative session. I've noticed that, some of these op-eds that I've been writing have had a lot of success. We've had a lot of changes at Regions Bank. We've seen the Alabama Supreme Court drop the ABA as a required accreditor. We've seen the SPLC issue become front and center of the attorney general's priorities, and so I feel as if those are real measures of progress, and it shows that some people say, well, why write all these things? Does writing really change anything? It absolutely does. Once you start changing the conversation and pointing things out that people haven't noticed, it really does lead to change. And I suspect this is one that we'll see some changes on too.
Yeah. Cause I don't think you necessarily need to you could stake out a position and explain whatever, but I just think there's a lack of awareness. I mean, that's kind of generally the rule of state government. State governments are very hard to understand. It took me 20 years to figure out how state government sort of functions. And, I think we're coming up over a hill here, and Tommy Tuberville's going to change a lot of things. He's going to clean house. But people just, they don't, to them, this is very small potatoes, very minutiae. But I think there's what's more important about it, for the sake of this discussion, is that people are aware that this is still a staple of your state government. On principle, you may not be impacted by the Board for Registered Interior Designers. However, if this is a governing principle, then it will show up in other places.
Well, yeah, and also it just gets embedded in the system. People talk about the deep state and that, and really what that is it's bureaucracy. And once you start embedding people into the bureaucracy that hold particular ideological standpoints, or you start putting people in positions based not on merit but on other criteria, then you basically lower standards across the board. You start filling the bureaucracy with people who really shouldn't be there, who aren't qualified to be there, who are chosen for political connections, all that kind of stuff. It's hard to get away from that public choice issue. People are always going to be appointed based on political connections. But if the criteria are tailored more towards excellence rather than, again, surface level level characteristics that you don't choose, if you put them towards criteria that reflect people's choices and people's success and people's merit in terms of career and proven success in the marketplace, then you basically build a stronger government because, and when I say stronger government, I mean a more excellent government, not a more powerful government, but a government that consists of people who are more competent. And that's what you want.
Yeah, well, it gets back to what you say about the deep state. So we have an administrative state. A lot of people, you don't have a lot of like Ron Paul libertarians who go to work at like the Department of Commerce, you know, that you know, people who have that as their calling in life probably see more government as a force for good. And the policy from that bureaucratic standpoint reflects that. And this, I think, by embedding, like you said, these quotas in there, it just makes that such more of a thing, and that's bad government.
Yeah, it is. And whenever you get bureaucracies and sort of entrenched interest embedded within the administrative state, as you say, or the deep state, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, then it's really the taxpayers who suffer, because you get you get economic problems based on it, and the taxpayers are subsidizing stuff that really ought not to be subsidized. But politicians, you know, politicians begin to pick and choose people based on, you know, votes and donations and connected firms and all these different criteria that are not, again, based on excellence.
Alan, folks want to find you online. Where can they look?
My website is alanmendenhall.com, and that's A-L-L-E-N. And my last name is M-E-N-D-E-N-H-A-L-L.
All right, Alan, we appreciate it. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.